Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Cloud Masters. This episode, we're going to cover Aurora Cost Optimization. We're joined by Kate Gowron and Amir Haroon. Very well qualified guests to talk about this topic. Amir, former senior database engineer architect for the last, I think, 10 plus years. You've worked in banking and insurance, I think Bank of America and a large insurer based in New York. Kate, you've published, you published AWS Database Specialty Exam Guide. So I think pretty well qualified to join us for this. And you also published a course in Oracle Database Security, and you're an ex-AWS Database Solutions Architect. So this topic, before we kind of jump into, you know, I think square one, you approached me about this topic. So I assume you've been seeing a lot of things from the customers you've been working with that kind of prompted you to say, you know, we need to do an episode on this. So maybe we'll cover, let's cover that. What have you been seeing out in the world that led you to kind of approaching me about this episode?
Sure. Well, one of the main things that we've been seeing a lot is a lot of customers are starting to move across to Aurora. So we're going to talk a little bit about the differences between RDS and Aurora in a bit. So a lot of customers are moving across to Aurora, a lot of new features on that. But Aurora is actually extremely hard to do an accurate price calculation for. There's very flexible parts to it. You can't just plug your numbers in fixed. You have to know your workload. It can be really hard to price. And we're seeing a lot of customers coming through and having extremely high bills compared to what they were expecting. And that's really throwing them. That's throwing a lot of their projects, their ability to innovate, their ability to scale really into disarray. So often they're coming to us with a really high urgent ticket. They've migrated, costs are through the roof. It's panic stations and they're needing us to come in. Really at that point, really troubleshoot and work out the issues. So I guess we're hoping that by sharing some insights at this point, customers can plan better, understand some of the pitfalls they might hit with Aurora, and then hopefully not come to us with a high or urgent ticket when they've already hit crisis point, so they can do it a bit more steady.
So back to, I don't know what square one, but a little bit of setting up the foundation here. When I was initially looking up, you know, in the background, what customers of ours are spending on Aurora, what are the costs and stuff, I thought it was its own service, but it was kind of buried as a SKU under RDS. So maybe, can you give us an overview of Aurora and the main differences between Aurora and RDS?
So RDS is a fully managed database service provided by Amazon. It offers multiple databases products such as MySQL, MariaDB, Postgres, Oracle, Microsoft SQL Server, Aurora, and most recently, DB2 was added to this product family. RDS offers this very simple way to manage a database in the cloud, and it is a good starting point for a company that's starting up, looking to just start up, and or existing company that's looking to lift and shift to the cloud.
Okay, so Aurora kind of picks up really where RDS like leaves off. So Aurora is actually a solution developed by AWS. It only runs using the open source engine. So you have a choice between MySQL, MySQL, depending how you pronounce, and Postgres. And it was a cloud native service that AWS and Amazon actually built. And it differs from RDS in that it's not just a wrapper. RDS is effectively a service wrapper that sits around another database. Amazon is actually a database engine in itself. So it works fundamentally differently to how RDS does, which brings on to the challenges around cost. So with Aurora, you actually decouple your storage from your compute. So on a normal database, it sits together. You have basically a program that runs your database, talks to some disks. That's how you get your data. In Aurora, those things are totally decoupled. So you can scale your storage and your compute independently. It brings us on to lots of additional features that we'll talk about later in this. But the problems with Aurora when it comes to cost optimization is that now you get billed separately for your IO. So effectively how much work you get the disk to do. And that can be a problem because it can be extremely difficult to work out what your IO requirements are going to be on Aurora. So that's sort of like some of the main level differences really between RDS and Aurora.
When would you want to use Aurora instead of RDS or RDS instead of Aurora? What are the situations there?
Sure. So one of the main reasons when you'd be using Aurora is if you're looking for like read intensive. So typically customers, in terms of their scale, they will at some point, they may outgrow RDS, i.e. they're running on a very large instance and actually scaling up their instance isn't their problem anymore. They're starting to hit problems around their IO, around basically how quickly they can get the data from disk when they're doing their queries. You may find that your CPU and your memory are actually okay on RDS, but you're still seeing performance issues and bottlenecks. That can be a good time to think about moving to Aurora. Also, if you want some of the additional features, so customers are now operating globally, and latency and getting to that data quickly is becoming a really big talking point. Everybody wants everything to work now. Nobody wants to wait. So having to wait for a connection to your database can actually cause your application to have latency itself. So Aurora offers things like global database that allows you to run in multiple regions simultaneously, bringing your data closer to where your application might be deployed, thereby bringing down your total latency. So that's sort of the two main use cases for Aurora.
Yeah, so RDS, you would choose RDS if you're looking to lift and shift to the cloud. That's a good starting point. You would also choose RDS if you're looking for a specific engine release for MySQL or PostgreSQL. And if you're on a MySQL database and you need an engine other than NODB, then you would also need to go to RDS route. Let's say you want to start it out, you want to just try out the database in the cloud. RDS does offer a free tier, which Aurora does not. And also, if you're looking to save cost and you don't really care about out-of-the-box high availability option, then you would choose RDS.
Now, going into the topic of the podcast, Aurora cost optimization, maybe we can take a deeper dive into what are the common challenges you're seeing users face when trying to optimize costs for Aurora. And maybe after that, we could also specifically talk about IO optimization. I hear about it a lot. I feel like that's like, just based off impressions, that's like the main issue, but maybe I'm foreshadowing here. I'll let you take it away.
No, you've pretty much just done the whole podcast there, Matan.
Damn.
So really, IO is often the crux of the issue on Aurora and getting that right. So I think with any database, one of the hardest things to do is to really understand what your database is doing and exactly how much resources that you need. And understandably, companies are a little bit concerned about not having enough resources. So we often see things over-provisioned. We see that on RDS as well as on Aurora. And then if that basically means that you end up paying for a lot of compute or memory that you're not, or even storage that you're not using. Now, Aurora removes one of the issues in that you only pay for the exact storage that you use. So if you're currently running RDS, you'll probably be aware that you have to pay for the storage that you allocate to your server, even if you're not using it. And the amount of IO that you get also maps to to the storage that you use as well. So if you need more IO, you tend to have to increase your storage, which means you then pay more money for your storage. On Aurora, things work a bit differently. You don't have to allocate your storage. The storage automatically grows and shrinks as you require, but you now have to start paying for IO. And what we often see with many customers coming from RDS specifically is that they'll have incredibly good IO metrics for RDS. So they'll get all those metrics, they can see it, they'll go along, they'll plug all those numbers into the AWS pricing calculator. They'll have everything really accurate. They'll plug it in, they'll get a figure, they'll be like, yep, we're happy with that. They switch to Aurora and their bills are 5-6 times higher. And that's a big problem because the way that Aurora works is fundamentally different to how RDS works. It's like an entire different database engine. It might say MySQL, it might say Postgres, but actually how it runs underneath is very different. So the storage layer operates differently, which means there is no like-for-like conversion you can do between RDS and Aurora. Some workloads are fundamentally cheaper to run on Aurora than RDS, which sounds surprising because you get a lot more for your money, and other workloads are astronomically more expensive, like based on the IO. So I'm going to hand over to Amir really to talk around a new feature that's come in really to help customers manage that cost. Because it's so hard to plan your IO, then Amazon's seen that as a bit of a blocker for customers looking to migrate to Aurora. They've heard the horror stories, they've searched online, they've seen customers with massive shock bills. And so they've now brought in a new feature called IO optimization. So Amir, do you want to talk us through how that makes things a bit easier?
Yeah, so Aurora offers two billing or two configurations called standard and IO optimize. IO optimization, you're paying slightly higher price for a fixed instance and storage, but you have no surprises at the end of the month in your billing. So with a standard configuration, you never know how much you're going to get charged at the end of the month, because it's all based on how much your workload, how heavy your workload was, how much I/O you did. So I/O optimized offers this neat feature for the customer that are doing really heavy I/O workload and they don't want any surprises at the end of the month. They can change their configuration to I/O optimized.
Is this like, before Sam, I saw you have a thought, but do these companies that are heavy in I/O, for instance, is this an industry specific thing? Is it just large companies in general? Is there a way we can fit these companies into boxes in terms of who should go one way and who should go another way?
It all depends on workload. So if you're like a web e-commerce application, right? So it all depends how much your traffic you're getting, right? And what's your peak season is like. So if you have a defined peak season, you may save cost by going to IO optimize on the heavy peak season, but then switch it back to standard configuration on your low season. So there's not really a way to put companies in the box. It all depends on how much workload and what your peak season looks like.
So that sort of goes in the same direction, Matan, as what I was thinking. But I was going to ask it a little bit differently. Is this purely a billing change, or is it actually affecting the performance of the instance? Because then the follow-up part to that would be, if I'm a business that's not sure, wouldn't I be better off going with that fixed high IO optimized setting, checking my usage afterwards, reviewing my metrics and saying, okay, then I would be using 7,000 reads instead of the 2,000 I previously expected. And now I know my cost, I can decide whether I want to switch back to the on-demand.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly one of the recommendations that we would make. So you can change every 30 days. So you can switch back and forth. You're not locked in. You are locked in for 30 days. But that would be a big recommendation, that it's so difficult to plan and accurately calculate your IO, especially when you're moving across Sigma RDS or even just moving on to Aurora from on-premises or a different cloud provider. That, yeah, if you use the IO optimized option, you're locking in your costs, you know, so you have that stability as well at the beginning. You're not going to hit the big bills. And then you can then go and get the absolute metrics, your Aurora metrics, to really go and understand your IO. Plug them into the pricing calculator, get a better price, work out if it's now cheaper for you to switch back to standard and then start paying for your IO charges.
Okay, so let's talk turkey then. You said slightly higher. What's slightly?
I think it's about, depends on your region. It's around,
put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, that's all right. It's around 30% higher in terms of the compute and storage. So that's around your ballpark. Okay. So the rough figure is if you're spending around 25% of your total Aurora bill on IO, you are a good candidate to switch to IO optimized. I say good because obviously every customer's use case varies slightly. But as a general rule, if you are around that 25% or if you're way above it, you want to be switching. If you're around 25%, then, you know, please come and talk to us, have a chat. We can do a deeper analysis. And actually, one of our colleagues has actually created a script available on GitHub that you can run. It's just a small Python script, runs by the AWS CLI in the background, that goes and scans all of your instances running on Aurora, looks at the last 30 days of usage, and then actually calculates how much you would have spent if you switched to IO optimized or how much you're spending now. So you can actually get a real, like an analysis that's done. So as I said, hope that link will be added to this podcast.
But as you said, those metrics are very specific to Aurora, so it's not going to work trying to compare to an RDS instance. You need to be already running that.
That's correct, yeah.
Cool.
But I just want to mention there are requirements to switch to IO optimized. You have to be at a certain version for MySQL and Postgres to be able to switch to IO optimized. For example, for MySQL, you have to be on version 3.0.3.1 or higher. And for our Postgres SQL, you need to be on version 15.2 or higher, 14.7 or higher, and 13.10 or higher. And if you're running Aurora serverless, you need to be on version 2. And of course, our global database is covered. And also the instance types that are required to switch to IO optimize are for Intel best family is T3, R5, and R6. And if you're using Graviton-based family, then T4G, R6G, R7G, and X2G are covered.
The tickets that raised alarm that then caused you to approach, you know, about this episode idea. Is this mostly customers that formerly used RDS, migrated, and then they have a bunch of, this is all a result of misunderstanding. They think it's apples to apples or close to apples to apples between RDS and Aurora, and then they meet reality. Is that the case or?
Yeah, I think so in general, at least definitely the ones I have, maybe I'm missing some different ones. But I think the ones that I have, they're predominantly switching from RDS, because I think that when customers are switching to Aurora, there is a little bit more understanding. Ultimately, you're probably going from either self-managed or EC2, or you're running on-premises, and therefore you're already expected for a slightly bumpy journey because you're moving into cloud, which is never seamless. So I think customers are already prepared. But when you're just moving from what is marketed as, you know, an RDS to a slightly different version of RDS, I don't think customers are necessarily aware that they're moving to an entirely different database engine and how it works at a technology level. And I think also because on RDS, you don't have to worry so much about IO in terms of the cost. Yes, it maps to your storage. I understand that. But I think customers can overlook it sometimes. They'll do a lot of tuning and they may well tune for, you know, CPU or memory or to make it just run faster. But they're not specifically tuning for IO. So often you can actually make a query run faster by increasing its IO but on RDS, you don't really care about that. You're not being billed as long as eventually you're not totally flooding all your IO available and causing bottlenecks. You don't really care. So I think for many customers, they've probably been running queries that have been optimized for RDS that are great, running really fast. They move them to Aurora and just Aurora slams them with IO charges that they didn't even see before because it never mattered on RDS. I think that's a big area as well. A lot of applications have been written for RDS or tuned for MySQL or tuned for Postgres, kind of default community editions. But Aurora doesn't run community editions as such. It runs sort of its own, you know, compliant edition, sort of like wire compatible editions of these software. So I think that's where a lot of customers get caught.
If we're thinking ahead, for anyone who's thinking about architecting their databases for Aurora, what should they keep in mind, design-wise, architecture principles, whatever?
Yeah, so in general, you want to be looking around things like data modeling. So any database should have a really solid data model. You should be looking at what are your queries doing. You should be running this from, you know, like almost a use case perspective. So you want to understand, what your application is doing, what the data usage patterns are going to be, how are you getting that data out. You might find actually that you don't even need a relational database, that when you do that exercise, you might look at it and realize, and nearly everything we're doing appears to be key value pairs here. Maybe we should move to Dynamo. It does happen. So I think that's really important. So doing that kind of query optimization is massive. Any database, you should be regularly looking at your worst performing queries, running explain plans, understanding them, tuning them. On top of that, things like partitioning and indexing are massive when it comes to IO costs. So with partitioning, you're going to break your table into chunks. Typically, you'd do something maybe monthly. If you've got a lot of reports that run monthly, you might only want to search the latest month. So if you split that into a partition, you're only going to be accessing 1 month's worth of data at a time rather than scanning the whole table. So then you're going to reduce your IO hugely because you're now not having to scan the whole table, thereby increasing your IO. That's like one strategy that works really well to start dropping your IO. And indexes as well. If you're incorrectly indexed on RDS, you might be able to hide behind it. On Aurora, you won't. If you're not indexed properly, you'll end up doing full table scans. So in a full table scan, it means that every single page, every row of your table is going to be accessed. If you've got a several million row table and you're having to pull each one of those from disk, you can start to see how your IO costs are going to just spiral astronomically. And things like scaling as well. So Aurora can do auto scaling. You can basically auto scale out like read instances as well if you've got a read heavy workload. So that can be really useful. So rather than over provisioning, you can run an almost bare bones for your baseline and then let Aurora scale itself when it hits spikes. You can even do a mixed model of having some Aurora provisioned and some Aurora serverless as well, which is a really strange use case. But we see this with a lot of customers with very strange spikes, and you can kind of like mix and match those two models together to really like cost optimize, to make sure you never have to over provision. And again, monitoring, you know, you want to be keeping an eye on all these things. Don't just set it up and think, yeah, we're good and walk away. This is a continual process. Think of this as almost like part of your delivery pipeline. Doing database tuning optimization should just be part of how you do things day to day.
I have a question, a follow-up. You mentioned one of my favorite words, Aurora Serverless. I've had mixed experience with it in a past life, mostly due to cold starts. But it might sound like a silly question if we're talking about IO Optimize, but does IO Optimize work with serverless?
Aurora Serverless is good for certain use cases, like if you have a variable workload or if you're testing on your application or if you're just in a dev test environment, because it can scale on at your demand, scale up and down at application demand. It can save you a significant cost. Also, Aurora Global Database is another feature that can save you cost by keeping the low latency and keeping the data closer to your user.
I'm just trying to think of, because the IO Optimized is sort of like a fixed billing, a maximum amount, and how that integrates with serverless, which should scale to zero and not cost much when I'm not using it. But that'll be one. Maybe you know, or maybe I'll need to do some follow-up reading when we're done. Or maybe CRISPR needs to delete that question.
I didn't even realize that was a question. So yeah, it may want to be.
No, it's fine. We'll keep it in. We left in a bunch of stupid things I've said in past episodes. Not that that was stupid, Sam. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But I think it's a good point though to add about. It's not so much on the serverless as such, but back to the cost optimization part. So one of the best ways to save money where you can predict your workload for a period of time, is to start using reserved instances or RIs. Now, you can use RIs on Aurora standard, but then of course your IO is still outside of that process because that's variable. But when you switch to Aurora IO optimized, you can now put that extra cost into the RI as well. So whilst you pay more for your compute and you pay a little bit more for the storage, you can then bundle that all into an RI. So Aurora IO optimized, you can buy that as an RI altogether. So actually, it can offer you that saving because you can, you know, depending on what you go for, you can get up to 40% savings on your RI. So if you're paying that little bit, 30% extra, roughly 30% extra for your storage and compute, but now you can bundle your IO costs and charges into your RI, then actually you can end up with a net saving. So I think that's worth talking about because a lot of people aren't aware of that you can now, you know, you can get the RIs for IO optimized as well, which therefore means you're bundling those costs into your RIs. And obviously upfront cost as well.
So Kate, so far we've talked about general cost optimization for Aurora, but are there any engine specific features that someone listening could use? For example, features that only work on Postgres or MySQL?
Yeah, so it's actually a good question. So if you remember really, Aurora is kind of like a platform. It's not a database in itself, just how RDS isn't. And obviously you have the two different databases, MySQL and Postgres, running underneath. And there's some specific features. One that's actually only just been released today, so really good timing, is around optimized reads. So optimized reads are a way to really benefit some of the fact that Aurora manages its storage separately to your compute. So normally when you're running a database, you have your database cache. And you try to fill your cache with as much really good data that your application needs. Because if you're retrieving it from cache, retrieving it from memory, it runs faster. And also you're reducing your IO because if you don't have to go to disk, you're not doing an IO, you're not doing a disk read. So then your costs like drop. But quite often you can actually have customers that are actually really struggling to utilize the cache in a sensible way. And often what can happen is a lot of your data can get pushed out of the cache, which then means you have to go and use IO to then read it back. But by using optimized reads, effectively, you're able to use kind of like a tiered cache. So Aurora stores some of your data, not in your database memory, but in kind of memory on your storage layer, if you like, which offers you an ability to get much faster access to it and can help reduce your IO. So that's one that's only available for Postgres. Optimized reads have been around for a while. They're only available on the R6G and R6I instance classes on Aurora, only available for Postgres. But they've just released an option where you can now get those as reserved instances, which is going to make a big difference in terms of your costs. So a lot of customers haven't been able to use this because they've got their costs involved. So you weren't able to add these into RIs. We're going to have to pause. My daughter has just decided. Hey, come on a second.
Oh, my God.
No. Leave that in as an idea if you want. So that's like one specific on Postgres that's really worth looking into. And obviously having the RIs now means you can actually add those to your reserved instance contracts if you wish, which is pricing a lot of people out of this before. And the second one for MySQL specifically is around parallel query. Now, parallel query is a bit of an odd one to bring up on a cost optimization talk, because parallel query is often seen as a performance enhancer, and it can come with extra cost. So one of the issues with parallel query effectively allows you, it provides a special path. So one of the benefits of Aurora is by having its storage separate, the Aurora layer actually has its own compute on the storage layer. When you turn on parallel query, your query no longer runs on the database. That query gets sent directly to your storage layer. Now, that can sound a little bit weird, but what it means is that the reason why it's a weird one to talk about in cost optimization is that because you're now running your query on your storage, you don't read the query from buffer cache, which means you have higher I/O. And as we know, I/O tends to be one of the biggest problems on Aurora in terms of the cost. But if you have a lot of these queries, you might have had to overspec your Aurora instance size to handle these, because effectively you might be blowing out your cache all the time. So you need a bigger cache, you need more memory, you need more CPU. You effectively pushed all of those really big, I'm only talking big, really intensive queries here. You effectively pushed all of those down away from your database down to the storage layer where there's different compute that's running those for you. So we've seen with some customers, their I/O costs go up to cover those, but they're actually able to downsize their Aurora instance class, thereby saving the money. So that's how that can be used as a cost saving. Unfortunately, you can't win twice. So because your I/O costs go up, you can't have this with provisioned I/O on Aurora. So you can only have this on standard. You can't move across to provisioned I/O on Aurora and then enable parallel query and then halve your instance class to save, you know, kind of triple win. Fortunately, it doesn't work like that. AWS are too smart for you to do that version. But it's definitely worth looking at. If you've got a, you know, if you are running a few really high intensity queries, it's really good for customers, say running batch. You know, they maybe run like some huge jobs, processing jobs, analytics jobs overnight that are really flooding out their cache. That can be a really good option. Parallel query on MySQL can be a really good option. So those are kind of like the two like real specific ones, like engine specific ones that are worth looking into.
We kind of been leading up to this point, but we talked about how to optimize once you're already on Aurora, or how to architect for Aurora. But what about migrating if you're already on RDS? What steps do you take? Did we build some sort of open source tool for that as well, or is there anything out there in the market?
Yeah, there's an open source. We don't need AWS does provide a few options to migrate from RDS to Aurora. But first step is you have to make sure you have to evaluate your current RDS instance to ensure that it's compatible with Aurora. Your versions and everything is compatible with Aurora database. And you can upgrade from RDS to Aurora in a few clicks in the console, but that would require downtime. If you do want to minimize downtime, then you can use a database migration service, or you can just create an Aurora read replica of your RDS instance and promote it when the lag is zero.
And what about if you wanted to, and I'd maybe explain if this is even a scenario, but migrating back from Aurora to RDS. Have you seen this? Is this a thing?
Yep. A customer I've been working with actually just been doing this process because of the issues that they were finding, that they were actually struggling with some of the performance on Aurora. They had a very niche use case and they decided to go back to RDS. And it's unfortunate, it's not so easy. AWS have made it a little bit, not one way, but it's much easier to go from RDS to Aurora. As Amir said, you can just do it via a click in the console. It's not the same going back, unfortunately. So realistically, the only way you're going to be able to migrate back is either using DMS, the database migration service. You can use that if you want to have low downtime or near zero downtime. Effectively, you sync your database back and then you switch over, you know, during your outage window. If you can handle a little bit of downtime, then you can just simply do an export and import method to get you back. But there isn't a console or an API call that unfortunately enables you to go back. So it's much easier to go one way than the other. So, you know, I used to work at AWS. There's a phrase called a one-way door and a two-way door. Moving to Aurora is a one-way door. It's quite difficult to get back. So make sure you've done your due diligence before you click the button.
So does that mean then a a best practice for migration, if you're considering, would be not to do the two clicks in the console upgrade. Rather, do a proper DMS or export from RDS. Do some tests and check what your IO looks like. Evaluate whether you do have any of these, for example, niche performance problems, before you shut that door on the migration and lock yourself in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's the case with pretty much any database, really, or any change you're going to do. You know, the recommendation, always test it in dev, you know, or in test instances, that's what they're there for. I know for some customers, you know, running an entire dev or testing application and suite may make things, you know, difficult in terms of price. You know, that you could argue that that's not cost optimized, but there's nothing stopping you spinning up an Aurora instance for a few days, putting some workload through it, doing some testing, generate some reports, some data, shutting it back down. That's one of the amazing things about cloud, that you can literally just go and do it and it'll cost you a few dollars. So really, there's no excuse to not test this beforehand, even if you aren't running an entire fully fledged, you know, testing suite, which I can understand.
Come on, no risk, no fun, huh?
Yeah.
I think, you know, we've been talking about costs in terms of dollars, but there's also costs of operating a database. You know, when we're talking about those types of operational expenses, how does the choice between Aurora and other RDS database engines affect all that?
Yeah, so I think in general, from a DBA perspective, if your DBAs are used to working with MySQL and tuning and Postgres, then not a great deal is different between the two. Whilst Aurora does work kind of differently in terms of the code that you'd use, you know, gathering an explain plan, updating the optimizer, all of those things are pretty much the same. Well, they are exactly the same in Aurora than RDS. So there's no more work or any changes really that your DBAs would need to go through. It's the same database as far as they're aware. But what Aurora adds really beyond RDS is it offers quite a lot of extra features that are not necessarily just day-to-day operational costs, but can really improve your speed of innovation and ingenuity. So for example, you've got things like fast clone features. So if you're ever working in a company where your developers are always grumpy because they're never able to get a copy of a database they can go and play with, well, fast cloning will fix that for you instantly. You can give your developers permissions to go and create their own clone. And as the word states, it's nearly instant. It only takes literally a few seconds to create a clone. And that's due to Aurora's underlying storage technology, that what it does effectively does like lazy loading, if you like. So it creates you the compute instance, spins that up for you, points it at the original disks running in your production database. But as soon as queries start coming in, that data gets slowly trickled across to the clone. So effectively, it means that you have up-to-date data on a cloned instance instantly, but that's fully editable, changeable, customizable without any risk to your production system. And that's a huge benefit. A lot of companies, it's not just operational costs, but their speed of development, their speed of deployment, having such a rapid test database setup using, you know, good value production data, you know, is extremely valuable.
So you talk about a day in the life of a DBA. I'm wondering if we can, for once and for all, dispel the myth that once you move to RDS, you don't need DBAs anymore.
Well, you're always going to need DBAs, otherwise me and Amir would be out of a job.
Beyond the economic, this was a genuine question that as I was working at AWS, a customer said to me, we're in the process of migrating. At what point do we start sacking our DBAs? I was fairly taken aback that people still thought that. So maybe hearing it from a couple of experienced database people would help.
Yeah, I can share a couple of stories of customers where these companies don't have DBA either. They didn't know we had it or they let go and they were struggling and they opened the ticket with us. There was one customer was struggling with log files. There were log files increasing and they don't know what to do, where to go with that, right? The customer was, they wanted to do a migration to save on the storage cost, but they have no idea how to do it because they had no DBAs. So we had to literally walk them through step by step and say, this is how you do it. So yeah, you definitely need DBAs. Same with the application. Sometimes when there's a query performance that we get out of query performance tickets. And the reason is because they don't have DBAs to explain to them how the query works in the database.
Yeah, I think still on that. I think that's something that's changed though. So for any DBAs that are listening in, I think one of the things, a bit of a tip would be to try to get closer to your application, your development teams. So you know, I've been a DBA for 15 years. The bags under my eyes are showing. So I've been DBA for ages, and I used to start, and my job was, you know, doing backups and patching, and it was really monotonous. All of that's been taken away. So all of the boring stuff that nobody actually really wanted to do has kind of been taken away, leaving you with really good time to do what we call like value add. So the value you can add as a DBA is getting closer to your application, understanding what they're trying to do, and really work with them to help them like tune their queries. They might be great at writing code, but you know the database, so you know how to tune it. You can really work with them and bring that value. So it's about switching from just doing the, you know, the mundane stuff and really going and working with your apps teams proactively to really help them and help them understand, you know, how they can write better code, how they can use your databases better, how they can optimize. And that's where the value the DBAs bring. So it's slightly changed, that kind of like app DBA role, sort of really where the future is right now, rather than just the infrastructure role.
To wrap things up, okay, you're on Aurora. Let's say this IO optimize, you figured it out basically. Your setup. So what about any best practices for ongoing cost management? I don't know, looking at CloudWatch, things like that. Any tips you have there?
Yeah. So yes, you're right. So CloudWatch is always a really good place. You know, just keep an eye on your metrics all the time. You can, if you're, you know, hopefully you're using, you know, a do its tooling and our console, and you can set things like, you know, cost anomaly detection, which is huge on Aurora. If you're not running Aurora IO Optimize, you need to keep an eye on that. If you're not using our tools, then obviously you can do similar things. A little bit of, you know, you can keep an eye on your IO costs through basically through like the billing, and you can also set up CloudWatch alarms to do that. So if you're not now, I recommend you do. You also be looking at things around backups. So your backups and snapshots, the number of customers I see and I log on and they'll be complaining about backup costs, or their costs are growing and they can't work it out. And they've been taking a manual snapshot every week for like the last 3 years and haven't deleted any of them. You know, that happens more often than you think. Don't be ashamed. You'll be one of many customers who has done this. So go and check your snapshots and make sure you've not got them from 2021. And if you have, if you don't need them for compliance, delete them. So look at things like that. You want to be staying informed. So there's, you can sign up to AWS mailing list as well, and also do it. We do fairly regular new feature wrap-ups to let you know of things that are coming out. If you're a customer of ours, your account manager will try to keep you in the loop on certain features that they know you might benefit from as well. So that's some really good ways to keep involved. I think that Amir was talking earlier around things like peak traffics. If you know you've got a big event, let's say you're releasing a new feature, a new service, or it's coming up to Christmas and you're a retailer, so you know you're going to be busy, you can switch to IO Optimized to cover that peak time, so that you're not suddenly going to have to pay huge additional charges, get yourself through that peak period, and then switch it back again. Use that ability that you're given to, you know, change and flex things around, basically to help you. And then again, we talked about this earlier, if you are going from RDS to Aurora, really recommend that you do use IO Optimize as well, just to protect you. It might cost you a little bit more for 1 month, but then you can, if you are then paying too much, you don't need IO Optimize. You've got real metrics, real numbers to back case, and then obviously you can change that back at that point.
One thing I was going to add is that if you're in a standard configuration, you want to keep eye on your buffer hit cache ratio and make sure you size your instance properly so you have enough memory to keep the data in cache, and so you're not doing that much IO. If you have two small instances, then you'll be doing a lot of IO, so make sure it's your instance, it's right sized properly.
I think we should also probably convert this into a blog, because I count of like what, 7 best practices just around that. So I'm seeding an idea here, but I think, you know, different strokes for different folks.
No, come on.
Different strokes for different folks.
Can't we just use the transcription service and have it automatically gen AI this for us or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's gen AI
this.
We've
just done 2 pods on gen AI. Surely that can solve it for us.
That would be nice.
Well, any final thoughts? I wasn't sure if you had anything else. We covered a lot. Pretty concise here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. You're now officially armed with information if you're thinking about going to Aurora, or if you're thinking about switching from Aurora back to RDS, good luck. we're here for you, though, if you're a customer. If not, feel free to get in touch with us. Yeah, see you at the next episode. Signing off.
Thanks, guys.
Ciao.
Thank you.
Cheers.
I always suck at these outros.
Yep.